Hello all, thank you for being here. My name is Damon Scott. I'm new with the BA. Technical Brewing Projects Coordinator is my title. And I work closely with all of our technical committee and the technical subcommittees, including the safety subcommittee. And I have about 10 years of experience in brewing, so I'm trying to bring that experience, mostly small breweries from 200 barrels a year to 10,000. So I'm trying to bring that experience and perspective to our committee work. I'm pleased to introduce our speaker today, Abby Ferry. She is the CEO and chief consultant for the Ferry Group, headquartered in Minneapolis. She holds a master's degree in environmental health and safety, is an OSHA outreach trainer for construction, and a certified safety professional. She employs an intellectual, practical, and creative approach to the toughest health, safety, and environmental challenges. In Ms. Ferry's current role, she is responsible for risk control, program development, training, and regulatory compliance for construction, manufacturing, energy, beverage, hospitality, and retail clients throughout the United States and Canada. In addition to providing services for clients, Abby is an adjunct instructor with Hennepin Technical College. Her previous experience included managing all aspects of corporate safety, health, and environment programs as safety director for a civil engineering contractor, and managing risk control services for nationwide accounts as a risk control consultant for large insurance carriers. Recently, the Ferry Group became the first safety services company to join the Minnesota Craft Brewers Guild as an affiliate member. In her spare time, Abby enjoys time spent with her husband and daughter, raising awareness for lung cancer and partially owning the Green Bay Packers. So please join me in welcoming Abby. Thank you.
Okay, so I think I'm going to stand here at the podium because you guys have all chosen to spread out a little bit, so I want to make sure everyone can hear. Usually, in the safety training that I do, I walk around a lot, so I'll just kind of move a little bit up here. but I just want to make sure everyone can hear. So, and I don't want to make you all move to the center. You've all chosen to sit where you want for a reason, so I'll let you do that. All right, so usually before I start a training session, when I'm at client sites, I make sure that I give clear learning objectives. And same thing when you're delivering training at your facilities. It's just a basic adult learning principle. You tell people what you're going to teach them, then you teach them, and then you wrap up by telling them what you just taught them. Because sometimes they forget. As part of this, I hope you guys take away a few things. Usually conference wisdom is that if you take away one new concept or idea back to your workplace, that it was worth the price of admission. So hopefully you can take away at least one thing from this 1 hour session as well. I want you guys to understand your role at a brewery, that you have responsibilities to people, personnel that are not your employees. So that's called a host employer. And the lawyers call it a host employer. OSHA calls you the host employer. So you've got some specific duties and responsibilities that we'll talk about. Talk about some regulations that apply. Also some breweries that have had some run-ins with regulations that apply to third-party safety at their facility. Talk about some high-hazard areas that you guys should know about. And then talk about how to communicate to these third parties that are at your facility. And I'm pretty sure that my slides are on the conference download mechanism. So know that you've got that, and I've got some links later on. So when you download it, you should be able to access all those links too. So safety is not rocket science. It's really a two-step process. First is identifying your hazards, and then the second part of safety is what? What do you think?
Avoiding those hazards.
Avoiding them, fixing them. That's all under the umbrella of controlling your hazards. So one, you identify your hazards. Two, you control your hazards. That's it. That's all safety is. It's not rocket science. But when you start getting into, okay, how are we going to approach controlling these issues at our site? That's when the safety stuff starts to get a little bit more difficult or intricate. So what's a third party? It's basically, as the session title explains, non-employees. So anyone that is at your brewery, adjacent to you, around you, either touring, visiting, doing work around you, that doesn't get their paycheck directly from the brewery that you work for, they're a third party. So delivery people, that's a huge one. And actually, let me back up. As I've walked around the expo and started, you know, trying to market this session, because I walked in here and I saw this room was ridiculously huge, and I thought that was optimistic for a safety topic at a brewing conference, especially this is the first year that there's safety educational track available. So I thought that was cool, but I knew it wouldn't fill, so I thought I should maybe market a little bit. So when I was walking around, I tell people I was talking about the safety of non-employees in a brewery, and people automatically would say, oh, like tours. And so, yeah, like tours, definitely. But there's lots of other third parties that can be at your brewery that you need to be concerned about besides just that crazy general public that often comes into your site to see what's going on. So other parties there on the list, and I see that the format's a little weird. I didn't mean for tour groups to be way on the bottom, but maybe I do because I don't want you to just focus on that. But all those other types of parties, and we'll talk about those one by one. What could they get into? So again, identifying the hazards, first step, what could they get into? Everyone thinks, ooh, brewing, cool, that's fun, and you know, you guys are just drinking all day and making beer, and it's awesome. But there's some serious safety hazards at your sites. One is being the chemicals, process equipment, the moving pieces and parts. You guys have lockout, tagout programs. Anyone have a written procedure or something for that? So awesome. Forklifts, that's a huge one. Is anyone else in here from Minnesota? All right, cool. It's hard to tell if I can, you know, everyone has that look, you know, the beards and the so I look different, so there's I won't name the brewer, but there's this social media platform called Instagram. You guys use Instagram, yep. And you know, I know you breweries, you're proud of what you're doing, and but I did see an Instagram post from a local brewer where I look at the picture a little closer and I see he's elevated somehow. And I look a little closer, and I see the forklift operator down below. This guy's standing on the forks of the forklift, or maybe on a pallet, you know, on the forks of the forklift. Is that okay? No. So I just kindly, you know, I double tap, you know, sure, I like the picture, but I'm calling you because that's not good. Other material handling equipment, also some Minneapolis type of example is that a lot of the breweries are now taking up spaces that used to be industrial warehouses or industrial settings. So huge, awesome buildings that have these overhead cranes. And, you know, they worked at one point and they're physically there. But there's a lot of issues that you should look into first before using an overhead crane at your brewery. And one of the local brewers, well, there's a few of them that have overhead cranes. One doesn't use theirs. The other one, I asked two questions and found out, yes, indirectly, they were using the overhead crane and didn't put any training or into that, just kind of winged it. So that's not good either. Confined spaces. You all definitely have confined spaces at your facilities. And also the completed product. Going back to the third parties, can they impact your completed product? You know, there's health issues and other regulations that we want to keep them out of your finished product. Otherwise, there could be some issues with that. Anyone familiar with what happened at Anheuser-Busch InBev recently? I have some Google alerts set up for one is brewery safety. Another one's construction fatality because I still keep tabs on the construction industry. I also have Google Alerts set for my name, my kid's name, you know, kind of a good thing, good practice to do. So this came up on brewery safety. And this is just a few weeks ago, less than a few weeks ago, where the news was updated that they settled with OSHA, which you can do. Anyone had an OSHA inspection yet? It's, you know, it's not horrible. It can be. But, you know, it's rite of passage. You can do it. So don't be scared of it. But one of the things that you can do after you've had your inspection and they send you your citations, if you got citations, you can appeal them either informally or formally. So what Anheuser-Busch did is that they formally appealed the citation, which the difference is really informal. It's just you going to the OSHA office and meeting in a conference room. Formal, you probably have attorneys involved. So it's a little bit of a higher level appeal. So they finally settled on $150,000 in fines, which is only a discount, as you see, of it started out as $162,500. So, you know, not much of a significant discount through the appeals process. They had 2 willful citations and 8 serious is what they were initially cited for. And those stuck. So sometimes OSHA will work with you on lowering the severity of the citation. With this one, they didn't. So the initial citation stood, but the monetary citation or the penalty went down. So what does willful mean? Is that a bad one? It's one of the worst ones you can get from OSHA. Willful means that you knew better and you did it anyway. So ways that OSHA can prove that, or that can be proven, is that you might have training records and written programs that show that you've discussed these topics, yet you allowed the unsafe condition to go on. So then there were 8 serious violations, which obviously serious, that's a serious violation, but they can't prove that you knew that it was wrong and let people do it anyway. The other bad one is repeat violation. So anyone that raised their hand that's had an OSHA inspection, take note of the citations that you've had, because OSHA, if they come back within 3 years and they cite you for the same conditions, that's automatically up there with the willful as far as the dollar amount, which can, I think it can start at about $70,000 per occurrence. So they'll get you. So what Anheuser-Busch had was no training for forklift drivers. Also, there were defective trucks in service. So if you guys have equipment inspection programs, make sure that they have integrity, right? You find something wrong, and then what do? Fix it, right? What if you can't fix it right away? Don't use it. You guys have little tags or other visual reminders that you could actually physically put on a piece of equipment so people know, don't use this. That's good to have. They also had blocked exit routes. That's pretty awful. Not good. Damaged storage tanks. Inadequate HAZCOM training. What's HAZCOM? Hazard communication. Yep. Good. So you guys know a little bit about what's going on with safety, so that's good. HAZCOM training, how would OSHA prove that it's inadequate? What they do is they interview your employees when they come out to your site to conduct an inspection. And your employees, what they should understand is that they could have a manager or some other representative present if they would like. They don't have to, and it's not required. So an OSHA inspector will ask some questions about, okay, well, this chemical that's right here by where you work, tell me about it. Where's the safety data sheet? What types of personal protective equipment are you supposed to wear when you use this? And if they can't answer those questions, the training's probably inadequate. So that's how they would figure that out. So the timeline, they were cited back in December of 2014. And OSHA does anyone know how long OSHA has to send you your citations? 6 months, yeah. And in my previous work in construction, sometimes I would get the citation on the 30th day of the 5th month after the inspection. So just kind of calendar it out so that you're not surprised when it shows up later. So they finally were able to, they contested it in December 2015, and just in the past few weeks is when they came up with this. So as part of the settlement, so it's not just paying the money and then it goes away, Anheuser-Busch and Beverage, they had to agree to some activities that they now have to, they're responsible and accountable to OSHA at those two facilities, which were in Jersey City and the Bronx. So they have to do self audits. What's PITs? Powered industrial trucks. What are those? Forklifts. Yeah. It's just how OSHA calls forklifts powered industrial trucks because there's different types that you could have at your facility. And do you have to have training on all the different types that you have? Absolutely. So not just one forklift, one training session. If you've got electric powered forklifts and propane powered forklifts, you've got to have a training for each one. Anyone have like cherry pickers or we call them walkie riders, but like a ride behind forklift type of thing. It's all in that same category as powered industrial trucks. Safety committees. Who has a safety committee? In Minnesota, we're required. So other states might not require it. At the federal level, it's not required. It's just a nice thing to have. So now they're required to have a labor and management and a safety representative on the safety committee. And management's actually responsible for implementing what the safety committee comes up with. And when OSHA, their friendly OSHA office, calls them and asks for, hey, how's the safety committee going? They've got to provide information back to OSHA. And I'm sure there's a timeline on this, might be a few years, that they will be held to this with their local OSHA office. And bringing it back to the topic, ensure that adequate training of all leased, temporary, and or subcontractors' employees. And that was, I mean, that's something that's kind of new to me. I've been doing safety for like 13 years about. And usually OSHA's focusing on your employees. I haven't received a citation that was related to other employees. So I felt that was, not only is this interesting for the brewing industry, but really safety industry as a whole. It's a good lesson to learn. All right. So identifying controls. Have you guys seen this hierarchy of controls? Have you had your safety 101 lesson yet? Awesome. So safety professionals, we like triangles, upside down, right side up. We like icebergs. We like acronyms, stuff like that. So I'll make sure you get all that kind of stuff. Hierarchy of controls. So you've identified a hazard. Now we go to the triangle. And we want to look at the stuff on top first. So whenever you have a hazard, you want to think first of how can I eliminate that hazard? How can I eliminate the need for the employees to enter a tank or to go up on the roof or any other, you know, undesirable, hazardous type of activity? Now, I know that's not always feasible. You can't eliminate all your hazards. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a job, right? We have hazardous work. I come from construction background, and I'm working with local brewers and also Coke and Pepsi and other types of facilities, and we all have hazards that we just have to work around all the time. Does anyone require any specific PPE at their facility to be worn 100% of the time? What do you require?
Earplugs.
Glasses. What else? Steel-toe boots. Yeah. So you see, so PPE, like I said, safety people, we like acronyms. So PPE stands for personal protective equipment. And you see that's at the bottom because that's the last resort. So whenever you have a hazard, don't just think about, oh, what PPE can I buy to protect people from it? Anyone have respirators? Okay. You guys have your written respiratory protection program with fit testing, also a medical exam or medical questionnaire. Now, I see a lot of beards, like I mentioned. Can you have a beard and wear a respirator? So that's something that when OSHA did their tour around a bunch of the Minneapolis area breweries, that was one of the main citations was respiratory protection program. You just look around and who's clean shaven, yet we require respirators. So that's kind of a low-hanging fruit a little bit for this industry. There's also, just to wrap up the respirator discussion, there's also some ways that you can not get around the OSHA standard, but if it's not required that people have to wear a respirator to protect their health, you can provide things that are called, it's a particulate respirator, but you might consider it a dust mask, just the white mask with the two yellow straps. You can provide that to your people on a voluntary basis. So when you're doing milling and grinding or clean up something that's dusty, but you're not overexposing people that they have to wear a respirator, you can provide those dust masks and say, you know, this is at your discretion if you'd like to use it. Okay. So if you can't eliminate the hazard, think about how you can substitute the hazard, replace the hazard. So changing light bulbs way up top, instead of having to bring a ladder out there, can we have a little pole that we use to, so that we're on the ground, because us humans, we like to keep our feet on the ground, ground level. So things like that would be an example of replacing or substituting the hazard. Then we get to engineering controls, which is probably where, it's usually where we start. Actually, when I first started in safety, we didn't have those top two parts of this triangle. We just started right with engineering controls. And then we learned, and now we do better. But engineering controls is actually physically isolating a person from a hazard. So is caution tape an engineering control?
Nope.
Because caution tape, I mean, is that going to physically stop anyone from going past it? No. What about red danger tape? Same thing. It's not an engineering control because it won't physically stop anyone from doing anything. So if you really need someone to physically be isolated from a hazard, think of your guards that are in place on a lot of your equipment. That's an engineering control. Okay. The caution tape, the visual types of things, written programs, training, posters, those are all what's called administrative controls or work practice controls, and that's the next one down. That's changing people's behavior and how they approach the work. So me giving your people training on forklift operation, is that going to stop the forklift from tipping over due to overloading it or using it wrong? Nope. So it's an administrative control. It's part of the pieces that can make the work safe, but it's not the entire picture. And then, of course, the last resort, PPE. So I also saw this from Brewers Association. I guess you guys also like pyramids. So there's the quality pyramid. And so you see hazard analysis and critical control points. I don't know. I just thought that might relate somehow. This Brewers Association quality pyramid. Also in other industries, we talk about three pillars. We talk about production, right? Making our money. That's important. But you've got to also have quality and safety for it all to work together. So you have your three-legged bar stool, right? And if you don't have one of those legs, you fall over. So it's important that we treat all of this stuff pretty equally. I know a lot of people say, you know, safety what?
First.
Safety first. Okay, you know, that's nice and everything, but is that real life? No. It's really, you know, safety, quality, production, all at the same time. So it's not one above the other, but they all have to be there for everything to work properly. So we'll just get this tour group thing out of the way, because I know that that's one of the big ones that people think of when you have visitors or third parties at the brewery. Tour route options. Do you just let people walk all over the place? Self-guided tour? Hopefully no one allows that, right? So already you have a work practice control or administrative control in that sense. If you are guiding them, you know, guided by a tour guide, hopefully, right? Is that another thing that you're doing? People are not unaccompanied. So those are all safety controls. So you've identified that it would be hazardous if strangers, public, are just walking through your brewery. So we know that. Also, taking a step further, and do you allow tours any day? Production days? Really heavy production days? Do you want visitors? You probably don't. That just adds a lot more to your plate than you really need. So, you know, it's okay to limit when tour groups are allowed at your brewery because it's a safety issue. Sizes of groups. Do you guys have a limit on how many people can be in a tour group? So that's a safety control. Do you require them to wear... Okay, so does everyone require safety glasses in your brewery? Pretty much. So what about the tour groups?
Yes.
Them too? Okay. What if someone shows up in flip-flops and shorts? Crocs. I mean, I don't know how far you guys take it. I know some breweries, they'll say, you know, okay, footwear, whatever. They're just going to stay on this path and not go in any of the wet or, you know, slippery areas. We have a, you know, the yellow brick road sometimes we have in the breweries where you've taped off or put tape on the floor to show where people should stay or not go. So think about that kind of stuff. And, you know, if your people are required to wear safety glasses, your tour group should too. And I like that because it really adds, you know, if a person's coming to a brewery tour, they know nothing about safety or the industrial nature of what you're doing. You give them safety glasses and they might think, oh, wow, I could get hurt here. Then they have some, you know, respect for what you're doing. It's not just, oh, hey, we brew beer and hey, we're just hanging out. Because that's what a lot of the general public thinks that we do, right? So they treat our tours like that. So, you know, lend some legitimacy to what you're doing. It's a dangerous place to work and dangerous place to tour. All right, so here is just an example of, I won't ask for too much interaction beyond like head nodding from you or, you know, shout back some answers. Can you tell me, is it engineering, administrative, or PPE controls in that top left picture? Engineering, right? Are they physically isolated from the hazard? You know, as long as the guardrails are in good shape, right? And proper height. There's specific heights that guardrails need to be. You might not be able to see it in the picture, but there's also, it's not an open guardrail. There's some grating or netting. I can't really tell exactly right there. The bottom right picture, you know, that might stress me out, but if they're not brewing, then okay. You know, sometimes I realize that breweries have become event spaces and another way to bring in some revenue, so I get that. But if we had a big crowd like this in a brewery and it's active production and a lot going on, it might stress me out a little bit. That's not good. So as long as the processes are down and, you know, maybe the brewery's closed and you've got a group like that, that might be okay. So this was just really a random occurrence, but I was at an unrelated event, a Girl Scouts luncheon, actually. Weird. I volunteer for the Girl Scouts, and I do safety training for their summer camp because they're building tiny libraries, because that's what we do in Minneapolis. We ride bikes and make tiny libraries. It's like Portland. So I'm doing their safety training. So, you know, just kind of interesting. But one of the group leaders, she said, you know, I was at the Coors tour years ago, and we had to leave abruptly because there was an ammonia leak and people were getting sick. She said, you should look it up. It was in the 90s. So I found it. I don't know if anyone remembers this story. From July 91, there was a tour group where about 40 people were taken to area hospitals. It was the second ammonia leak at the brewery in 10 days. Up to 700 employees were also evacuated after a forklift hit a 4-inch pipe carrying ammonia. And to hear this lady's side of the story from being on the tour as this is happening, the tour group leader did not take them on the most direct, quickest route out of the brewery. So think about, you know, what if shit happens, you know, as you're, you know, you've got everything controlled and, you know, some things are still going on and you're doing a tour. What if there's, who's in the West Coast? What if there's an earthquake? Midwest, what if there's a tornado or, you know, fire, severe weather? What do? We've got these general public people at our place, and now we're a little bit responsible for them. So make sure you've got some emergency evacuation types of procedures, whether it's for, you know, weather types of events or stuff that could happen because of your process, like this ammonia leak. So overall, 35 people were taken to hospitals in this incident, and 950 people were evacuated from the brewery. So that's pretty significant. So obviously OSHA showed up and did an investigation. And then in July 2010, I don't know if July is if there's something there about trending for ammonia leaks or strikes, they were actually investigated after another leak and received 10 serious OSHA citations, totaling over $62,000. So that's pretty significant when you're getting over, you know, in the double-digit thousands of dollars in OSHA fines. You usually don't see like that AB and BEV, the $150,000 plus. You just don't see that a lot from OSHA unless it's a very significant incident. So this is pretty significant too. All right, delivery personnel, truckers. If you self-distribute, you know, that's one thing. But you've got third-party truckers and deliveries that show up at your site. And an issue I've seen with some of my brewery clients is that suddenly, you know, you're working in the brewery, and then there's this guy that walks up and he's asking you about, you know, beer. And you're, who is this? What are you doing here? He's like, oh, I'm the driver. I just came with, you know, your kegs or something. Okay. Should a trucker be able to just walk into your brewery? No. So we go back to that hierarchy of controls, and how can we physically isolate the person from the hazard, which is the entire brewery where we don't want them? I've seen people have what we call it, like the trucker cage. We have your cage, and you stay in your cage. If you're not staying in your truck, you come in here, and you do not pass this area. And not to pick on truckers, but sometimes you do physically have to put something there so they do not go past it, because they're running on deadlines, and whether perceived or actual. And, you know, they might want to hurry up the process and just go try and find someone. But we don't want that. We don't want them just wandering in. You could also set delivery hours. I've seen that at some facilities. So that's an example of an administrative or work practice control. And that would involve some communication with your business partners so that they don't show up at a time that you're not accepting deliveries and they need to give you something. Also, designating delivery personnel within your brewery from your staff that they're designated to load and unload. You don't just want anyone jumping on a forklift. You don't want a trucker jumping on one of your forklifts, right? Don't loan out your equipment. Contractors are notorious for this. They're doing work at your facility. Oh, I see there's a forklift there. Can we use it? What's your answer? Nope. If you want to borrow their stuff and they let you, fine. But don't loan out your stuff. I've seen I've seen injuries where on a construction site, there was a painting crew that borrowed a forklift from the iron worker crew. The iron workers, two of them were up in a 125-foot articulating boom platform where you have to be tied off to be in those. I don't know if any of you guys have those JLG types of or genie lifts at your sites. So these iron workers are up there, 125-foot boom. They're pretty high up. And they generously loan their forklift to the painters, who then backed the forklift into the base of the lift. And it was enough force, you know, they hit him at the base, and it generated force up top, brought the guys, you know, slam down on their knees, and they had significant enough injuries that they couldn't come back to work the next day. They had to have some time off, and when they got back to work, they had to have restricted duty, so it was pretty significant. So just don't loan out your stuff. Suppliers and vendors. Do you have people that come in and they read gauges, read meters, do some fine-tuning of different things as part of your process? And, you know, they're not employees of your brewery, but they're there a lot. They're in and out. They know your place. They're still a concern because sometimes you're switching your processes that day. It might be something different than what they're used to seeing or different than what occurred last time. You know, it's a business decision if you're okay with them just independently coming and going inside your brewery. But you might want to have them check in and check out. Again, going back to, you know, what if there's something that requires an evacuation at your brewery? How do you know who's there? So think about having some kind of logbook, visitor sign-in sheet. Most of us that, you know, vendors, suppliers, safety inspectors, we're pretty familiar with having to do a check-in, check-out, badging, having an escort when we walk into places, so it's not out of the ordinary. Maybe designate a point person at the brewery that maybe the supplier or vendor that comes in to do routine work, that they're always there, and they when they're there, they talk to Bob. So, okay, Bob knows when Steve is here at the brewery, and that's all we need. So as long as there's some kind of communication there between your people and the third party. What about the unplanned, unannounced people? That's kind of tough. So inspectors, regulators, you guys not only get maybe OSHA inspections, but what, agriculture, food, other types of maybe city, county, fire. Everyone wants to come to the brewery. So, and sometimes, you know, they're inspectors or regulators. And just because, you know, it's an OSHA inspector or food, ag type of inspector, it doesn't mean that they have free rein. It's perfectly acceptable for you to say, well, you haven't been here, so let's just do this orientation so you understand the hazards of our site, and here's some safety glasses since you don't have any. Just take control. It's your workplace. You control the area. You can kick people out. You can let people in. And if you want them to be safe while they're at your facility, that's up to you, too. I once had an OSHA inspector who, on a construction site, he told me he wasn't going to wear a hard hat. And I said, well, I'm sorry, we can't do the inspection today. You're not going to wear a hard hat. We require hard hat, safety glasses, vests, and steel-toed boots. And he said, I don't want to. And I said, are you serious? Is this a test? And he, I found out he was just kind of difficult. There was no reason for it. So a little of an extreme example, but, you know, whoever these people are, they should be wearing the PPE that you require of your people, of your visitors, and that's important. You might have an orientation. Anyone have a site orientation for people that are not employees? Anyone? Okay. It could be as simple as you have a poster that talks about your top 10 brewery safety rules. Watch out for forklifts, stay within the yellow brick road, must wear safety glasses, must be accompanied by brewery personnel, and whatever else you want to say in your rules. Just as long as there's a template, there's something that's consistent, that if any of your brewery personnel are greeting a guest or a visitor or a vendor or supplier, that they go over at least that core list of information. I've seen that to be pretty effective at breweries I've worked with, and they've gotten pretty creative with their brewery safety posters, and so that's always pretty cool too. You can still maintain a fun atmosphere, and that's fine. But yeah, just any visitor that's in there, making sure that they follow your rules. Volunteers. Now, I know this is could be touchy, so I don't want to talk too much about the ins and outs of volunteers, but same thing. You know, they're a visitor. You might have waivers. Anyone have waivers that you require people to sign if they're a volunteer at one of your events or at your brewery? So you might ask an attorney, and they'll say, well, waiver is nothing. So if you have legal counsel, which most of you probably do have someone that you can call, I would bounce that off of them. It's your call about the waiver situation for volunteers. And orientation. You're probably giving them instructions for something anyway, so why not add the safety aspect of it too? So just some general things that I hope you take away. Sign-in sheet, it's good for not only safety, so you know that people are where they're at your facility. Maybe you want to have name, cell phone number that they actually have on them. That's important. I used to have people write down a cell phone number and they don't have it with them. And then I'm trying to call them based on the visitor sign-in sheet and it's going nowhere. So make that clear. It's also good for security because, I don't know, there's people that want to do harm for no good reason, so let's keep them out. So keep your location secure. It's good for marketing, too. I worked with a brewery that when we implemented the visitor sign-in sheet, we included company name and email. So especially for tour groups or other local business type of vendors or unrelated to the actual brewery, but just people that were coming through as a visitor, it was good for marketing. You put those people on your email list, maybe, for future events and notices. And I also suggest strongly doing some kind of orientation. So maybe your orientation for a new brewer at your site, it lasts. How long does your orientation last when you hire someone new in the brewery? Anyone? There's no right answer. A day? Where you sit them down in the classroom and talk at them for a day? It's probably hands-on, right? A lot of stuff we do, it's on-the-job training. So maybe you have a half hour of actual classroom type of instruction, and then, you know, throughout the day, you've got different types of stations or personnel that they're supposed to meet with for their orientation. Same thing for visitors. Maybe it's 5 minutes. Maybe it's 20 minutes. It really, really depends. If you have contractors that are at your site for expansion, construction, repair, regular service, it's important that they understand the risks because they're adding more hazards to your site. So you want to talk to them so you understand what they might be adding as hazards to your people that you didn't foresee. The only way you're going to know is if you talk to them. Having worked with contractors for a long time, they're not going to just volunteer information to you. So it's important to have some kind of pathway or mechanism to actually drag the information out of them. posted rules and information, I'm big on visuals, but you don't want to have safety wallpaper, right? You want to switch up your visuals throughout the year, maybe rotate things around. Don't put up too many signs. You know, I've seen places go really overboard with instructional safety signs. There's ways that you can make safety signs for free that actually meet the OSHA and ANSI standards for what a sign should look like. And I'm blanking on what the website is right now. It might even just be safetysign.com. But you can print it, you save them as PDFs, and you can have caution, danger, confined space, any kind of sign you can imagine. Another good idea is always having a brewery staff member accompany a visitor, whether it's a tour group or truck driver, delivery, service provider, or that there's a means for communication by radio, telephone, they're side-by-side, whatever it might be. Now, host employer. So let's say, so now you've got, I'm sorry for the, I don't know. When you make something on a Mac computer, then it comes to a PC, it's anything goes. So you've hired some professionals to do some work at your brewery. Professionals, right? Professionals. Hopefully there's a written contract in place. That's a good start. Handshake deals, you know, that's at your discretion, that's your call. You know, if it's your neighbor that you grew up with and they have an electrical company and they're going to come in and do a big job for you and a handshake deal is okay, then okay. I'm not going to tell you how to do your work. But in general, I know your insurance company would be a lot happier if you had written contracts in place, purchase order, job order contract, service agreement, something that clearly defines the roles and responsibilities, and you can sneak in safety stuff in those contracts. Even if you have a template contract that comes from legal counsel, you can add really anything you want to it, but then you give it to a contractor, and what can they do? They send it to their legal counsel, and it comes back to you with stuff crossed out. So then it becomes this whole back and forth sometimes, but at least you're talking. Short-term work, long-term work, you know, treat it the same. They're still at your brewery. They could still cause a hazard to your people. Bottom line, you know, we care about our people, but we also don't want to cause harm to others that are doing work at our facility. So unscheduled and intermittent work, that's usually when things happen. You know, you have something that broke, and we just need someone in here right away to fix it. So sometimes these contractual things are going out the window because you have to get back up online and get it fixed. So whenever there's that repair type of work, that's usually a red flag for me that we really need to make sure that you know, we have a safety or a brewery staff person assigned to whoever's coming on to do that work, just so that they're aware of what's going on in the brewery. Scheduled intermittent work, this is a little bit easier to control because you know when the people are coming in, so you kind of have a sense for what's going on. And that you have a contact for them. Think about what these third parties are doing that could create a hazard to your people. Look at it as, how can my people be impacted? How could customers be impacted? You have a tap room, you've got tours going on, you've got a major construction project going on that's usually in an area that the tour goes through. Might want to temporarily close that off for a while. When you're introducing too many people to an area like that, that's when we can have some problems. Location of work. Are the contractors, service providers, are they working 6 feet in height? Why would that be an issue? Yeah, at 6 feet, if it's a construction or contractor company, they need to be protected from falling. And that's on them. That's not for you to, you know, you don't have to put up guardrails for them or anything like that. But that's something that they need to have in place. What about, so breweries, you guys are general industry. safety rules. So what's your fall protection height?
4.
It's 4 feet. Why? I don't know why. You guys are allowed, you guys are protected more than construction. I don't know why. So not only is a contractor working 6 feet in height, but what if they're working over your stuff where they could drop wrenches on your people, could drop bolts inside of a container, inside a vessel that's holding beer. We don't want this to happen because it'll spoil the whole batch, and then we have an issue. Hopefully you've got business interruption insurance, stuff like that, right? Just in case there was an issue with a third party at your site. Confined spaces, that's to be continued here. A little bit more about engineering controls, about when there's contractors especially bringing on a hazard into your workplace. So an isolation control would be a physical barrier between the contractor's work and your people or operations. So, whether it might just be as simple as closing the door to the electrical room, right? You've got electricians working on some stuff, and usually what they do is they just leave the door open. There's electrical panels open. Is that bad? Yeah, you want that stuff closed. It's supposed to be closed. So if you've got the electrical contractors in there, just let them know, hey, we've got a lot of people in and out of different areas of the brewery. Just please keep the electrical room door closed, and that way we know you're in there. Something like that. Ventilation. Is the work that's being done, is it causing an atmospheric hazard, changing the air quality, eating up the oxygen, or welding? There's, I think I have a picture in here later, but welding is notorious for creating some really nasty gases that are just immediately causing health effects to you. Anyone weld in here? Yeah, so you know. lots of welders, you know, you deal with those acute bouts of, you know, metal fume fever. You just kind of don't feel right. Stainless, we've got stainless piping and stainless vessels in our breweries. And when you weld on stainless steel, do you know what that creates? Really nasty stuff. Hexavalent chromium, and that's one of OSHA's big focus areas, but that's going to make you sick right away. So if you've got that kind of stuff going on, there might have to be some ventilation, and whether that's provided by you, you open some doors that you don't usually open, you run some fans a little higher than you usually would, or the contractor's actually bringing a mechanism to have forced fresh air ventilation. That's something that would need to be discussed before they come onto the site. Or what's a way you can eliminate the hazard when you have contractors creating a bunch of hazards to your people? What'd you say?
Shut down.
You know, don't have your people there, if that's possible. Schedule that type of hazardous work when your people just won't be there to be impacted. That would be the number one way to control those types of hazards. But I know, again, that's not always feasible. So that's why we talk about these other controls. Prevention of dropped objects. This is a huge one. Stuff can fall that is just in its regular position. It's not really a good example overhead in here. But something that's just fixed to the ceiling, and because it's, different rusting processes or other degrading processes that happen, stuff can fall, or dynamic dropped objects where it's due to work being done. So that's why when there's contractors at your site or vendors or service providers that are working above you, you just might not want to be in that area while they're doing that work, so that something doesn't hit you and cause an injury or cause damage to equipment. I know in most of your cities, counties, states, these contractors that you're hiring, they have to have certain certifications, qualifications, licenses. So do your homework on these people before you bring them onto your site. You don't want to be... you want to get busted by the city for not having permits that you need to have. That's very important. But also, you know, certain contractors, if they don't have these types of licenses and certifications, what might that say about their safety? Not great, right? So you can kind of make these conclusions about your business partners. Again, do not loan your equipment and vice versa. That's one of my big pet peeves. Usually nothing good happens when that occurs. having an abbreviated version of your brewery personnel orientation. So if you don't have an orientation program in place for your own employees, one, start with that, and that's okay, to have to implement or develop that type of program. But once you've got that in place, now think of how you can condense it and change it up a bit for those visitors. So you can train So it really depends on how you deliver this. So I've seen some larger sites where they're going to have a contractor with a large crew at their facility. So a representative from the brewery or host employer provides training to the supervisors that represent the contractor, and then they delegate that contractor rep to provide the training to the rest of their crew. So if you trust that they'll deliver that, that's great. And you can do all this stuff or not. I'm trying to bring some awareness so that people understand about the hazards of having these third parties, not just tour groups, but some of your business partners that you have come into your brewery that you kind of just consider part of your group. They're not, there shouldn't be an adverse relationship, but just, make sure you guys all understand the hazards that they're creating when they come to your site or that your processes create for them. Again, PPE, your regular PPE that's required, you should require that of your third parties. Or, okay, so now your workers are at your brewery and you also have this contractor performing work that they're creating a ton of dust. So maybe there's some extra PPE you might want to have available for your people when there's these third parties at the site. So think about that as well. But if they're creating just, horrible, hazardous atmosphere, I don't want to see you having, all your people are suddenly in respirators with the cartridges. And if it's that to that point, you might just want to use the other control of just having your people not in the area. And all these pictures I found in public domain, some of them, I don't know if any of the breweries are here in this room, but I tried to give credit to the names when I could. But breweries are pretty proud of when they're doing these construction and expansion projects. And so they put the pictures online. And then I, as a safety person, I really am into that. So I look at the pictures and thinking, oh, all right, what do they got going on here? I'm not picking on this brewery, but, it's pretty open air, but they've got some welding operations going on. So there might be some air quality issues, but it looks like there's no brewers there, unless those are the brewers. You do all your own work, right? How many of you have a shop? You have a shop in your brewery? Yeah, those are my favorite. Back in construction, too, that used to be the place that no one ever wanted me to go, and that's where I always wanted to go, okay? So I go to your main office, and you've got a shop and a yard, and that's the best place to go because there's just stuff that you don't have a safety data sheet for, these grinders that came from Grandpa's house that don't have a guard on them, hoarding. I don't remember if the session already occurred, but there was someone here that was doing a session on, I forget the title, but I saved it. But they had some interesting photos about that particular topic of having that shop at your site. So their advice was don't hoard stuff. I work with a couple breweries where they have, it's like Grandpa's shop inside the brewery, and there's vintage things that just were not made to be in a modern workplace. They don't meet the safety standards. So what do you do with that stuff?
Get rid of it.
Yeah, just take it to your own garage. Let it go. It shouldn't be at the brewery. Because then if you do have those regulators coming to your site, they're going to focus on that. And you probably don't even use it as part of the brewing process or anything that has to do with making beer. So don't have it there. Clean up. Okay, let me just check time real quick. And of course, if anyone has questions, you're free to raise your hand and approach the microphone and ask. Or I'll have my contact information up at the end as well. Confined space, I may not get into this too much. However, know that there's a construction standard that relates to construction work being done in confined spaces. And it gets very specific about notification and communication to the contractors that are coming to your site. You need to inform them of your confined spaces, whether they require a permit or not, in a way other than just posting a sign. So you got to talk to them. And the standard actually requires a lot more specifics as far as pre-permit space entry, during entry of a permit space and after, that you have to have all these coordination meetings so that every party is clear on what the hazards are, what the controls should be, and what program you're working off of. So if you have questions on that, I've been doing construction confined space for a long time. The first about 5 years of my career was spent in the construction of wastewater and water treatment plants. So probably the most disgusting confined spaces you could ever be in. So I'm happy to be around breweries now. It's not as disgusting. Some places might be disgusting. If you have questions on confined space, I'm your person. Policy language. So all the stuff I talked about, you should probably encompass it or put it into a written program. In safety, we say that regarding OSHA, if you don't document it, it didn't happen. So you could tell me that you do orientation and you do a weekly safety meeting, and I'll say, oh, cool, where's your sign-in sheet from the most recent meetings? Oh, we don't have that. Well, it didn't happen. So if you're doing that kind of stuff that's proactive for safety, get credit for it. Have a sign-in sheet. Just, it can be as simple as your weekly meeting, just date, topic, everyone signs in. That's it. Just keep a record of what you're actually doing for safety, to be proactive. I'm going to skip some of this policy language stuff. If you want help on writing a written policy about third-party safety, you can refer to the presentation and download it from the site once that's released, or contact me. Anyone do job hazard analysis, JHA, or job safety analysis, JSA, or AHA, THA, PHA? There's lots of different acronyms for that one. Anyone doing that? Cool. So I'm doing that with a couple of my clients. I mean, I really see that as the foundation of a good safety program, is that you identify your major tasks, whether they're routine everyday tasks or emergency, this broke down, this is how we fix it. So we walk through the steps of the task, the hazards of each step, and then the controls for each step. So that's been really effective with the clients I've been working with, just to kind of attack these different tasks in a way that it's not so difficult or daunting. You have a one-pager that gives you the breakdown of the safety procedures for a given task. And then you put them all in a binder and you've got your part of your safety program. Okay. As with any safety program, there's this continuous cycle of improvement. It's expressed in different ways, just depending on what, you know, safety or quality type of guru that you subscribe to, but this is pretty general. Plan, do, check, act. So plan, your written plan. Do, I would say that encompasses your employee training and the, you know, the actual go forth and do the tasks after doing the training. Check, you guys have safety inspections. You conduct routine safety inspections. Maybe start doing something like that, and then what else should you do? If you do an inspection, you should write it down. There's apps for that too. There's some cool apps out there, really cool safety stuff, you guys. You can really get into some fun safety stuff. In the App Store, you can look up Safety Reports. They're out of Nebraska, so a cool American-owned company that has safety inspections you can do on your phone or tablet through the app, and you can generate automatic emails that would go to whoever's responsible for fixing a hazard, and then they would have to respond, and that's how you can show your documentation of, yes, we identified something, and yes, we also corrected it, and here's when it happened. So kind of cool stuff like that. There's another app that's pretty popular called iAuditor, and it's not just on Apple, but it's also on Android phones or tablets, but those are both free. They have some, there's good functionality in the free versions. There's also paid versions for both of those if you want more, if you're a larger facility and want to create your own inspection template or share amongst more people. So that's some cool stuff. Act, that means, okay, we found a hazard, even though we thought we corrected everything and we were really smart and proactive. So then you have to act. And that might mean that you stop work until you can figure out the safe way to do something. And then you start it over again. So at any given day in safety at your brewery, you're in, you know, some part of this plan, do, check, act cycle. Okay, so here's where I tell you what I just told you. And I always feel like it goes really fast. So if anyone has questions and you're too shy, you can email me, call me, text me, tweet me, look for me on LinkedIn. I do a lot of safety informational posts on LinkedIn, and people have told me that they like them. So, find me on there, and there's some good content. Got to plug the Minnesota craft beer, our cool Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox poster. I want to get one of those. if anyone has questions, go ahead and fire them off. Otherwise, you can contact me. So thanks for your time. Thanks for coming to the safety session. There's another, I think there were four sessions total. This is the third one. The fourth one is Matt from the Brewers Association, and he's speaking on
Hazard assessment,
which is awesome. So if you want to know more about some of the stuff that I just talked about and how to actually do the whole job safety analysis, hazard assessment at your facility, that's going to be a really good session to go to. Matt knows his stuff. He actually brews. I don't brew. They don't let me do that. So he's got some really good inside type of information. So I really thank you guys for showing up for the safety session.
Thank you all. Please join us for Matt's talk. It's just in 114 next door. There's also some free safety glasses outside, so please help yourself. We have plenty. And coming from a guy with a big head, they were like the ones that I held on to at my brewery, so they fit really well, and hopefully you can put them to use. So thank you.